see to the right is built from non-combustible construction and has non-combustible materials around the home. So it's if that was if there was mulch on the ground or a fence or combustible siding, then that that house would be igniting due to the radiated heat. So I'm going to turn it back over to Steve to talk about, review the one section that we want to focus on tonight in the fire code around vegetation management.
Okay, so the graphic that you're seeing is a depiction from National Fire Protection Association that demonstrates the two current zones around a structure that are enforceable under state law. So zone one, which is a space between 0 and 30 feet, and zone two, which is a space between 30 and 100 feet. There's also a third zone coming called zone zero, also called the ember resistant zone. That's going to go into effect for new structures approximately January of 2023. And then it will be retroactive to existing structures and landscapes and approximately 12 months later in January 2024. So we're gearing up to begin education of residents and property owners on that. Section SSS, or paragraph SSS, of the fire code is our basic vegetation treatment requirements. That's a section that's been in the fire, our fire code locally here for many, many years, for a number of cycles. It actually establishes section 4907.4 of the Berkeley Fire Code. And this is not an all-inclusive, comprehensive list of defensible space requirements and vegetation management requirements. It's actually a summary of requirements that are set forth within the California Government Code for things like trimming branches away from chimneys and removing vegetation adjacent to structures and roadways. We actually go a little further with our local adoption, and our current changes that we're making to that code section changes the specified distance for defensible space. Previously, we listed 30 feet. The current standard is 100 feet. We've actually had the ability to enforce 100 feet for many years based on the California Government Code. We wanted to bring that specific 100-foot value into the Berkeley Fire Code to make sure it was clear that property owners are responsible for the 100-foot defensible zone, defensible space. It also specifies that within that 100 foot between the structure and 100 foot perimeter around the structure, that it is permissible to have vegetation management, the intensity of that management vary. And again, that's generally between the 0 to 30 foot in zone one and slightly less stringent requirement in zone two, between 30 and 100 feet. We also, in this particular code cycle, have clarified that not only as a property owner do you have to treat vegetation on your own property that exposes your own structures, but we make it clear that if you own property adjacent to structures in fire zones two or three, that you have to basically take these same measures. So this is basically saying that you have to protect your neighbor's structure from your vegetation. It doesn't require that anyone goes onto their neighbor's property to manage vegetation there, and it doesn't authorize anyone to go on their neighbor's property. All it means is if you have vegetation that's exposing your neighbors, that you have to treat that in accordance with the standard vegetation management requirements up to your property line, so up to your fence line.
This is the major clarification that we've made, again, to kind of set up the next 12 to 24 months of work that we have to do as a community around vegetation management, and specifically in fire zone two and three. I want to spend some time now just talking about there's a significant amount of work that has to happen. And I think the logical question is it can be daunting, it can be scary, it can be expensive. And I want to provide the council and the community an overview of kind of what is the city doing, what is the fire department doing to support the community as we work through this process together. Because this really does have to be a team process that we work together on collaboratively. It's too complicated for anyone to tackle alone. So the first thing is we started a wildland urban interface task force that's interdepartment group composed of representatives from the fire department, the city manager's office, city attorney's office, parks, rec, and waterfront, and public works. And we're basically coordinating these efforts between all these different departments because it really is a truly a multi-department interdisciplinary effort. And a lot of the things I'm going to talk about are coming out of the task force. We're also deep into the Community Wildfire Protection Plan, which is required for us to pursue many grants, and is also the community facing document that looks at the risk of the community and where the priorities should be generally at a strategic level for moving forward with vegetation management and other campaign or other activities to reduce the risk of wildfire. As a supplement to the CWPP, we are working right now and have almost a final draft of a more tactical level wildland urban interface work plan, which is going to include all the different programs and projects that we're launching forward with over the next 12 to 24 months. Specifically to get into 2023, we're going to be launching a pretty big education campaign to help everybody understand what is it that we need to do in terms that we can all understand to prepare for a wildfire. What is it that we need to do to be compliant with State Board of Forestry and our local fire codes when it comes to vegetation management? And what actions can we take to protect our home, harden our home against ignition from a wildfire? There's 40 steps. Many of them are really simple. Some are more complex and more expensive, but most of them are really simple things that we can do to our house now to prevent ignition of the home like we saw in that video. And finally, we're already deep into evacuation planning. We're installing the outdoor warning systems. We've got, and so we're going to be talking about evacuation and making sure that we are prepared for an evacuation if and when that needs to occur. And I should have said, all of these things are funded by Measure FF, which passed in 2020 from the voters. So the next thing is we have dedicated staff that are assigned to a new division within our department called the Wildland Urban Interface Division. And those personnel are responsible for essentially coordinating all these activities. And they're also responsible for education and conducting defensible space inspections in fire zone 2 and 3, which is about 8,500 inspections a year. We know that the buildup of vegetation in especially fire zone 2 and 3 is really a 100-year problem that we've all allowed to happen. And we think that, you know, it's reasonable for us to, as a city, figure out ways to help work with private landowners to perform that first initial lift of getting a massive amount of vegetation out of the hills. We're looking at different public-private partnerships that exist in other communities and ways that we can incentivize with grants or rebates to help homeowners through this process. The details of that program are still being worked out. That'll likely be a one-time program to help everybody get, again, the majority of the vegetation out, and then homeowners will be responsible for maintenance on an ongoing basis. We've had a chipping program in parts of Fire Zone 2 and 3 for almost 30 years. We're currently analyzing the program, looking at modernizing it, and also expanding it to a greater portion of the city. We know from the experience of other jurisdictions that when you coordinate chipping after a defensible space inspection, the voluntary compliance with vegetation standards goes way up because we're removing one of the biggest hurdles for folks, which is how do we get rid of the vegetation. We're also looking at, we have many, you know, our housing stock in Berkeley is older and therefore vulnerable to ignition. So we're looking at, again, public-private partnerships to partner with folks to hopefully get more homes hardened and resistant to wildfire. For education, for the public-private partnerships, both home hardening and vegetation management, we're actively looking at grants to leverage city dollars so we can get more bang for our buck. We are currently looking at, we are increasing capacity for on-call contractors that can do hazardous vegetation removal. So we're ready for what we think is gonna be a really massive increase in the need and use of contractors of that type starting in 2023. We are restarting the work that was started before the pandemic on the Safe Passages program. And for those that aren't aware, Safe Passages is essentially takes the zone 2 and zone 3 and looks at all the streets on a block by block basis. And in terms of what do we need to do to make them as accessible as possible for folks that are evacuating or for responders that are trying to come into the fire zone. So that includes looking at repainting weathered and red curbs, replacing signs that are worn or missing or damaged, looking at vegetation management strategically along those routes, and also looking at new additional parking restrictions specifically on high fire danger days. We've also just recently procured a new water tender, which is essentially a 3,000 gallon water, mobile water truck, so that we'll have an immediate water supply that we can deploy up into the hills or more so adjacent to our city, into the wildland area, if there's a fire that ignites in Tilden Park, because there's not great water supply up there. So that gives us a new ability that we have not had before to make a quick attack on fires when they're in an incipient phase up in the park. And finally, we're getting ready to perform an evacuation time study. So we have a really comprehensive understanding of what is the capacity of the various streets in our city when it comes to evacuation, mass evacuation, and where do we need to do work to improve those evacuation routes. So there's a lot going on. And I hope this provides some comfort and reassurance to folks that we are, while we are have some massive changes that we have to make as a community, we are committed as a department and as a city to helping everybody through this. This is not just something we're going to push out and expect everybody to understand and comply with. So happy to take any questions if you have them.
Thank you so much, Chief Sprague. We'll go first to Councilmember Wingraff.
Thank you so much. Did you call on me?
I did, yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. So first, I want to extend my gratitude to Fire Marshal Riggs for his amazing work on this fire code. I know how challenging it's been for you. And also to Interim Chief Sprague for your commitment to our community and to educating our community, to working with the community, and to listening to our community. We have some really major things happening. It's going to take a lot of work to get people to understand why we have to do all of this. And the clock is ticking. So we have to move quickly. I have before I move adoption, I have one question.
And council member, we're gonna have to open the public hearing before we entertain a motion.
Okay. All right. Please. So education, prevention, inspections. There's one word missing, enforcement. How are we going to deal with this? I know it's a huge challenge. I know we don't want to criminalize people for not complying, but if one person doesn't comply, they're putting everybody else at risk. And your presentation showed that really clearly. So
Great question. And yeah, we are, our goal is obviously to educate and gain voluntary compliance, but we are completely retooling our inspection process and our citation process, along with several other departments that use it, to make it more user-friendly for staff and for residents. Because right now, historically, it takes so many staff hours to complete one citation process that it's oftentimes avoided. So it's looking at being, we're looking at completely retooling it, streamlining it, making it more user-friendly, so that when we do have to use that tool, it's available and it's something that's actually functional for the city and the community.
Yeah, the reason I bring it up is because, as the fire marshal mentioned, a lot of this has been in our code for a long time, but it's never been enforced. So now people are saying, wait a minute, you know, we don't want to do this. So without the enforcement, I mean, the code's there, but it doesn't really impact the community.
Yeah. And then the other piece is we actually have now 3 dedicated full-time inspectors to perform the enforcement activities.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This is a big step forward, and I look forward to working with you both in the future.
Thanks for your support.
Thank you. Councilmember Drosty, followed by Councilmember Hahn.
Well, I just really want to thank you so much for not only this presentation and all the work that you've been doing, but in particular, your collaboration with the Panoramic Hill neighbors in particular. And this is quite a beast of a document, so I just really want to thank you for all of your work on it. You know, wildfire safety is a major issue for all of Berkeley, and the Panoramic Hill neighborhood is particularly affected. So I just really want to thank you for the changes in your supplemental that we received before the meeting, and the Panoramic Hill neighbors send their thanks as well. As you know, because you've really engaged in a collaborative process with that ESR Zone 3 component of our zoning map, I think that, you know, what we've heard is making sure that we're giving just extra engagement to constituents regarding the sprinkler systems in existing structures and the considerations that will have to be balanced, the level of potential benefit for house fires versus wildfires, the potential trigger cost of the systems, especially in older and historic homes, the geographic application and fairness of the requirements, and whether they apply only when the building footprint is expanded or even for other renovations that don't expand the footprint. And I just really want to thank you for engaging with these issues with the neighbors and really being willing to talk with them to help sort them out. And given that we have all these nuances to think about, especially around the sprinkler requirements, I'm just once again really pleased by the collaborative spirit that you and your staff has exhibited and our city manager has exhibited. So I look forward to helping facilitate that dialogue with the neighbors, not only in Panoramic Hill, in Zone 2 as well, and actually everywhere, all residents in Berkeley. It's important that they know about these important provisions. And I just thank you for engaging in dialogue and making sure to include all of the stakeholders in just a really collaborative process. So thanks again. Thank you for all your work.
Thank you. Okay, we'll go next to Councilor Hahn.
Thank you, and I'm going to echo the comments of my colleagues here, but I really want to thank you and the whole department for putting together this fairly complex set of amendments and changes. It's good for you to have pointed out to us, because there is a lot of red ink on these pages, that most of what we're looking at is either a restatement of local amendments that we have long enacted and reenacted every 3 years, as well as language so that our code conforms with new elements of state law. And I also really appreciate that you just helped shine a light on the few elements that are sort of new and different. So thank you for that. I also really want to thank you for highlighting the ways that you are coordinating our efforts. There are many things going on to address both preparation for a potential catastrophic fire on public land, working with private property owners, looking at vegetation, home hardening, evacuation, notification systems in case of emergencies, all of these things, safe passages. I know they've all been in process, but sometimes it can seem like they're not coordinated. And the piece about communicating with the community, really working in partnership with the community, making sure that we understand that we're asking people to make big changes, hopefully possibly considering potential financial assistance or loans for people who may have limited or fixed incomes and might have trouble from a financial perspective implementing these changes. I just think the extent to which you continue to pull all this together in a cohesive way, I love that you have a group of point people who are coordinating this within the department. The more we can do that, I think the more successful that we're going to be, and especially with the spirit of partnership that you're bringing, which really is core to getting anything done in Berkeley. I think too often we think, you know, we're right and we're going to just pass a law and then everyone will just jump to it. But that's not really the way we are successful. We're successful when we work in partnership, whether it's with our residents or our businesses, and we really try to help them. We need to all help each other get to the right outcomes for the community. And I really see that commitment in the work you're doing and appreciate it very much.
Councilmember Robinson.
We have been so blessed tonight with abundance of just incredible presentations. I really look forward to printing this out and carrying it with me everywhere I go for a few weeks until all the vocabulary and visuals are embedded in my brain. Chief Sprague, I hope you'll forward the slide deck itself to us. The item before us is, of course, deeply positive, but I think what it's a piece of that's even more exciting, you know, for weeks and months now, especially for those of us who were lucky enough to hang out with your team with the Hillside Association a few weeks ago, we've been building up to your real vision to have a comprehensive hazardous fuel reduction plan. And I can see the skeleton of it coming together so rapidly, and so deeply appreciate the challenging situations that you and your team constantly find yourself in between property owners who have an abundance of hazardous fuels on their properties that they want to take care of, but don't have the means or the tools to do so. And you know, sort of the other camp, the you know, people who take sort of the Lorax approach to environmentalism and are afraid that, you know, removal of any tree anywhere in the city of Berkeley is going to spark a disaster of one sort or another. But the key is to be looking top down, have a comprehensive science-driven approach. And I hope you know and fully appreciate that we absolutely have your back in pushing those difficult things and making the city safer. Really appreciate you bringing this to us. Really, a just incredibly educational presentation for the council. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's now open the public hearing. And I will now ask, are there any attendees that would like to testify on item 23, the adoption of the 2022 California Fire Code with local amendments? If so, please raise your hand. I am not a co-host because I lost my internet connection. So if you could make me a co-host.
Sure thing. Great.
Nancy Rader.
Good evening. Yes, this is Nancy Rader, speaking as an individual member of the Disaster and Fire Safety Commission in strong support of this item. As you heard, these code updates and better enforcement methods will give fire department inspectors the tools they need to ensure that each property owner properly controls their vegetation so that together we can substantially reduce the extreme wildfire risk that we face. I urge you to adopt them, and I look forward to their implementation and enforcement as needed. I also wanted to take this opportunity to express my real appreciation for Interim Chief Sprague. He's been working very diligently to remediate the city's previous lack of attention to wildfire prevention issues. With support from Fire Marshal Riggs and others, he's accomplished more in the past 2.5 months than I've seen addressed in the prior 18. This is clear from the October 24 written progress report that the chief submitted to council, that the chief also just outlined. It's really wonderful to see this amazing new concerted effort. I'm still looking forward to the development of a comprehensive plan for the use of Measure FF funds and sufficient budget information to allow the commission to perform its oversight duties, but I'm now more optimistic that these things will eventually be forthcoming under Chief Sprague's leadership. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so it is, I just want to do a time check. It's 10:53. And we do want to vote on this. So I'll make a motion to suspend the rules and extend the meeting to 11:10. Is there a second?
Second.
Roll call, please.
Councilmember Keserwani?
Yes.
Taplin? Councilmember Taplin to extend to 11:10. Come back. Councilmember Bartlett?
Yes.
Harrison?
Yes.
Hahn?
Yes.
Wengraff?
Yes.
Thank you. Robinson?
Yes.
Drosty? I think that was a yes. From Drosty?
Yes.
Great, thank you. Mayor Arguin?
Yes.
Councilmember Taplin to extend to 11:10?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll go to our next speaker, Jonah Gottlieb. You should now be able to speak.
Thank you. Yeah, my name's Jonah. I'm a Berkeley resident, but also a former resident of Sonoma County, and so deeply familiar with the dangers that you described in your very thorough presentation. My family had to keep our photo albums in the car every single October. Because we've feared evacuation. I've had friends and neighbors and teachers lose their homes. I wanted to just highlight one aspect of your presentation, the public-private partnerships part. I'm deeply in support of this, and I'm wondering how much of this focuses on relationships with both tribal nations and individuals who have traditional ecological knowledge of cultural burning and prescribed burns. Among California's Native American tribes. I think that especially in Berkeley, where we're an epicenter of some of the foremost research into these practices in the entire world, in fact, I think that we have a really unique opportunity to pioneer some of these partnerships with tribes who have this knowledge of cultural burning. And so I hope that we're able to consider that going forward. Thank you all so much for this presentation. I appreciate you.
Thank you. We'll go next to Ellie.
Hi, I'm Eleanor Coffin, a PhD candidate at UC Berkeley, and I have a comment about procedure, which I believe takes procedural precedence. You knew that a huge number of your constituents showed up specifically to speak on the police chief issue, and you deliberately put it at the very end of the agenda, nearly 5 hours after the stated start of public comment on the issue. You deliberately prioritized hours of comments from private landowners over the immediate needs of Berkeley's most marginalized residents. That is undemocratic and unconscionable, Mr. Mayor, and I hope that we will have time for public comment on the police chief issue.
B. Beekman on the fire code amendments.
Hi, I was waiting for a final public comment. Sorry about that.
Are there any other attendees that wish to speak on the fire code amendments? Do we need to keep the public hearing open, or is there a new public hearing that's scheduled, Chief Sprague?
I am going to have to ask Rose that question. I don't know.
Thank you for that question. It is a new public hearing for the second reading of the ordinance. So this public hearing can be closed.
I will move to close the public hearing.
Second.
Okay. Will the city clerk please call the roll on the motion?
Councilmember Keserwani?
Yes.
Taplin?
Yes.
Bartlett?
Yes.
Harrison?
Yes.
Hahn?
Yes.
Wengraff?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Drosty?
Yes.
Mayor Argin?
Yes. The motion carries. Thank you. Okay. I will now turn the floor to Councilmember Wengraff.
Thank you. Okay. I have a procedural question.
Yes.
Number three of item 23 is to conduct a public hearing and adopt a resolution establishing annual permit fees, inspection, and billing rates. Is that included in the main motion? Or is that a separate motion?
I think that's part of the staff recommendation. So it could all be done as one omnibus motion, or if you could vote, you could sever that and vote separately, I believe.
Okay. Well, I would like to move to adopt the first reading of an ordinance repealing the Berkeley Fire Code, Berkeley Municipal Chapter 19.48, and reenacting BMC Chapter 19.48, with the amendments that were submitted in sub three this evening, and adopt a resolution setting forth findings of local conditions that require more stringent building standards than those provided by the 2022 California Fire Code, and rescinding resolution number 69, 69, 176 NS. And I believe that's it. Do you see anything else that I should be including?
I believe item three is establishing the annual permit fees.
And conduct a public hearing, and upon conclusion, adopt a resolution establishing annual permit fees, inspection, and billing rates for inspection of property sites by the Berkeley Fire Department, and rescinding resolution number 69, 179 NS, and all resolutions a mandatory thereof.
And then we should, do we need to vote to schedule the public hearing on December 6th, 2022, Mr. Interim Fire Chief?
I have to defer again to Rose. This is my first time.
Thank you for the recommendation, or for the question. That is the recommendation of staff, is for council to schedule the public hearing for December 6th.
Okay. I'll add that to the motion.
Okay. And that reflects the changes in sub three, correct? That staff introduced today. Okay, great.
Yes.
Okay, great. I will second the motion and thank you. I agree with everything that all the city council members said. I think the fact that the department's been able to do all this really critical work to implement Measure FF with limited resources is really impressive, and just being creative and thinking outside the box. And we were at a presentation on Sunday evening at the Claremont Canyon Conservancy, and I think everyone really appreciated the thoughtful work that the fire department is doing. And this is a big step forward. It's going to be challenging. We're going to have to really educate and work with property owners, but it's critical to keep our neighborhoods safe from the threat of wildfire. So I really appreciate all the work, and this will come back to us on December 6th. Are there any other questions or comments from the city council before we vote? I don't see any raised hands, so I'll ask the clerk to please call the roll.
Councilmember Khazarwani?
Yes.
Taplin?
Yes.
Bartlett?
Yes.
Harrison?
Yes.
Hahn?
Yes.
Wengraff?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Drosty?
Yes.
Mayor Argin?
Yes. The motion carries. Thank you, Chief. Thank you, Chief Riggs. I have a procedural question to the city clerk. We did extend the meeting to 11:10, but I also understand that the rules prescribe that the meeting is also subsequently extended additional 15 minutes beyond that extended period. Is that correct? To take non-agenda comments, or is it the meetings extend until the time that the council extends the meeting to?
The latter. So pursuant to the rules of procedure, if any agendized business remains unfinished after the extended time, it will be referred to the Agenda and Rules Committee. And in that event, the meeting shall be automatically extended for up to 15 minutes for public comment on non-agenda items. So I do not believe that that provision applies in this case because there is no unfinished business of the city council.
Okay. Well, as the city manager had noted, she has removed item two. So the appointment of the chief of police is not moving forward at this time. But I did say that anyone who would like to speak on item two can do so at the end of the meeting during non-agenda public comment. I will exercise the chair's prerogative and, we may technically adjourn at 11:10, but I'll stay on to hear as many speakers as possible. And I encourage my colleagues to do so if you're able to. I am going to limit, let me ask, does anyone want to speak on any items that are not on the agenda? If so, please raise your hand. And I'm willing to stay to hear from people, even if people have already spoken. So, okay, so I'm going to give each speaker a minute and happy to stay and hear any comments. And once again, the city manager pulled item two, but I did say that we'll hear your comments. Okay, Andrea Pritchett, you're the first speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So after waiting for 5 hours, I have to say I'm really concerned listening to your comments and those of the city manager about how you already sort of know that the chief would never, had she known, have allowed such behavior to occur. Chief, Mayor, I think this is the problem with an internal hire, that they're gonna plead ignorance. They're gonna say, I had no idea. Officers for Emily Raguso's scanner are already saying, they had no idea, this never could have happened. That's not an impartial investigation. And I believe you need to let your police accountability board actually handle this investigation, or what was the point? If you don't trust it for this kind of thing, then why are we spending so much money on it? It's just a toothless tiger. You've got to put some confidence into it. You've got to make that process succeed. Otherwise, all the other initiatives that you're trying to do, like ceasefire, it's just hollow words and wasted resources if you don't have the public's trust. And that's very much at stake in this moment.
Thank you very much. So as the person who helped write Measure II, I do support the Police Accountability Board having a separate investigation and a third-party investigation. Two investigations can happen simultaneously. The PAP absolutely should investigate this, and it should be focused on policies and procedures. And there should be a third-party independent investigation. So I just want to clarify that. I obviously think the comments are disgusting, outrageous, unacceptable. They don't reflect any standards of modern policing or constitutional policing. I'm fully committed to working with this council and the city manager and the PAB to investigate and hold people accountable and to address the broader patterns and practices of racial discrimination, discriminatory policing that should not be happening in Berkeley. So I want that to be clear at the outset as people are making their comments, what my position is, which I have articulated publicly. Jonah Gottlieb is the next speaker.
Thank you. I'm speaking as a member of Cal Berkeley Democrats and Cal Young Democratic Socialists of America. I want to echo what has already been said about allowing the Police Accountability Board to do their work. But I agree that another independent investigation is needed specifically because the Police Accountability Board's purview is just related to policing. And if the email from the city manager shows anything, it's that this cover-up, if a cover-up did happen, may have gone beyond the police department. And so we need an independent investigation that is able to really see the entire broader situation of what actually happened here and get the facts so that the council can make appropriate decisions. And so I believe that this investigation, that's not the Police Accountability Board, should be overseen by the council and not the city manager, because she may have been implicated in this.
Thank you. Kelly Hammergren, followed by Rin Tran. Kelly Hammergren, you should now be able to speak.
Okay, thank you. I have been a manager of a lot of people, manager of a huge department, and I knew what my employees were doing and how they were performing. And so with Jennifer Lewis, she was employed by the police department during the period of time when these alleged incidents occurred. And it's very concerning to me that if she didn't know about it, then why? And as an interim chief, she should know what is going on in her department. And so I don't think this, I don't know, is a good excuse. It tells me that she doesn't have a handle on what's happening in her department. Thank you.
Rin Tran, followed by Ilana Auerbach. Rin Tran, are you there?
Yes, hello. Good evening, Berkeley Mayor and council members. My name is Rin Tran. I'm a student at UC Berkeley. I'm speaking on the allegations against the Berkeley Police Department, and I'm hearing that, you know, the appointment of interim chief of police, Jennifer Lewis, is going to be postponed. But regardless, I would like to express that if the Berkeley Police misconduct is left unaddressed, it will create a norm. This is a norm of unaccountability. It is a norm that encourages those in positions of power to overlook injustice and perpetuate a system of racism and anti-homelessness. These text messages are clear evidence as to why there is a poignant and deep suspicion of the police within the young community, and this is a weakened trust in our domestic and local protection. It manifests as a weakened trust in the government and in you all. Berkeley students will not feel safe if this is not addressed, and it won't be because of the crime in the surrounding areas, but it will be because of the failures of the Berkeley Police Department to operate without bias. Please keep our police accountable. Thank you.
Thank you. Ilana Auerbach, followed by Nathan Mizell.
Thank you. So if Jen Lewis knew about this, that's a problem. And if, as it seems that both you, Mr. Mayor, and the city manager claim that she didn't know about it, that's a problem too. So any way you look at it, it's a major problem once this is confirmed that these texts and allegations are truly real. You have to recognize that there's a conflict of interest such that the city manager being involved in any kind of oversight whatsoever. An internal hire such as Jen Lewis as to be chief of police is a conflict with trying to discipline cops who she has worked with for decades. So the next chief should absolutely be an outside hire. I also wanted to just remind y'all of at the beginning of the meeting, the public defender's remarks. Super disturbing, to say the least, and please investigate those as well. This goes to show BPD, according to D, is to oversee the ceasefire program. They're not treating the young people, even giving them their Miranda rights, and they're going to be developing this program. Please look at that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Nathan Mizell, followed by Matty.
Hello, Mayor and Council. My name is Nathan Mizell. I am the Vice Chair of the Police Accountability Board. I speak as individuals. I had 4 minutes of public comment prepared, but instead of that, I will say thanks to the community members who organized and pushed for this correct decision. Thankful to the council members who support. I know we would have had ultimately if it had gone to a vote. And into the mayor as well. And, you know, I'm thankful as well that city manager made the right decision in this case. It, you know, it may have taken several hours into this meeting to come to, but I am appreciative that it was the right decision. Certainly, the PAB will begin this investigation. I think as you would see from our meeting today, we want to go in haste if we can, obviously do a thorough investigation, but one that without delays. And I'd say lastly, you know, what the public defender, chief public defender Brendan Wood said is brand new to me, literally at this meeting tonight. Allegations of legal protections of essentially kids being violated is extremely serious. And that apparently happened under Interim Chief Lewis' time as chief, and that is something I believe we should look at as well, and I will ask the PAB to look at as well. But thank you for tonight, and hopefully we can continue to, you know, promote the public trust, as I believe is all of our role to do. So thank you.
Thank you. Matt T, followed by Mariah, followed by Ellie.
Good evening or good night, Mayor and council members, members of the public who are still here. You know, before we start looking outside of the forum of this meeting and this council and mayor and the city manager, I'm sure you all know what's the purpose of the consent calendar. It is to address routine, non-controversial matters that the public may have very little interest in. I doubt anybody in the city of Berkeley, in the right mind, would have ever thought that the appointment of a chief of police 2.5 years after May 25th, 2020 is a matter of routine or non-controversial. And if they did, they should not be making decisions in the city. I think anybody who's been involved in putting together the agenda for this meeting should be going into a room and figuring out what went wrong. Because putting this item under the consent calendar, no matter how many closed session meetings you may have had before, shows a complete misunderstanding of what happened in this country in the last 3 years and what the public demanded in this city to happen for police accountability, reimagining police, et cetera, et cetera.
Thank you. Mariah, followed by Ellie, followed by Kit Saginaw.
I really hear that last comment. I'm concerned that one of the overwhelming responses I heard from the city when this first broke was, we'll investigate and we'll find that Jen Louie knew nothing about this. And that's so beyond the point and not related to the egregiousness of it. I also think it's disrespectful to the intelligence of your constituents to imply that that she could possibly not know, because those text messages speak to a culture. And I think we have a culture issue that is deeply rooted in the police department. And as the voter who spoke 5 hours ago regarding the failure of Measure L, we have a lack of faith and trust in the city government, and that starts with the manager. And so I do also second the person who called for an investigation that is not seated in that department. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll go next to Kit Saginaw, followed by Alicia Harger.
Thank you so much for taking my call. So a couple of things. One is, I'm concerned that the Police Accountability Board does not really have the weight with City Council that it ought to have. For instance, in this case, the Police Accountability Board had a recommendation about the appointment of the police chief. And as far as I know, the City Council had no interest in hearing what that recommendation was. And the other thing is that one of the issues that the Police Accountability Board I know needs to work on, and I'm very much hoping that the City Council will, actually it's not that the PAB needs to work on it, but the department needs to work on it, is early intervention, so that when things such as what we've heard about in the bike patrol are going on, that is uncovered and dealt with before it becomes completely ingrained and has really caused this kind of trouble that it is now causing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll go next to Alicia Harger, followed by Avi Simon.
Hi, everyone. First of all, shout out to all of us who stayed through this entire meeting to get these points across. I have to say, I think that's pretty impressive. And I had at least 2-3 minutes worth of stuff to say, but to try to distill it down, one thing that really concerns me is your relationship with Jen Louis and also the city manager, but particularly Jen Louis, as evidenced by the fact that you presuppose that she is in good standing. You presuppose that she's done nothing wrong when the investigation hasn't even begun. So how can we trust you to respect the results of an investigation if you presuppose its results on camera? I hope that makes sense, because to me, a good investigation, you need to start with some degree of an open mind, right? And that's simply not what's happening. And so what I fear I'm seeing is a pattern of kowtowing to the police department that really happens a lot in this city. And I hope you guys can just consider your roles as elected leaders, right? We don't get to elect the police chief, we get to elect y'all. So I would hope that you would be able to take a stand against the department and not just give in to whatever the police chief says, especially when it's right after we have a public defender come in and say that our department is violating the civil rights of children. And you still think that she's done nothing wrong? I'm sorry, like that's just a little crazy to me. Thank you.
Avi Simon, followed by Ayanna Davis.
Hi, guys. I really want to echo the comment of the last speaker and the speakers before them. I think there is a serious issue with the amount of trust that you, Mr. Mayor, and the city manager clearly place in Jen Lewis, and her failure, first of all, to properly regulate constitutional violations with regard to Miranda rights, and second of all, her complete ignorance of this really disturbing trend within her own department. And I also want to point out that the screenshots released earlier suggest that Berkeley police were following an illegal program of arrest quotas. That's illegal in the state of California. A lot of empirical research suggests that arrest quotas are racist and they lead to lower closure rates. And frankly, if Jen Lewis never knew that this kind of policy existed or never held anyone accountable for enforcing such a policy, she is completely incompetent. And it's also extremely worrying that the leader of the police union was the spokesperson of all of this. And we depend on you guys to hold them accountable. Thank you.
Ayanna Davis, followed by Glenn Turner.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. And thank you, Mayor, for staying and listening to our comments. I would just like to say, I support the idea of there being two investigations. And as a longtime Berkeley resident and mother of six sons and a daughter born and raised in Berkeley, I can attest to and have witnessed the historical behaviors of racism, harassment, and bias by Berkeley Police Department. It's disturbing to me to think that the interim chief, with her experience and history with the department, has no awareness of this historical culture of institutional racism, bias, and harassment. As a manager, she should know her staff, and I'm pretty sure she does. And after hearing the testimony of the public defender about the abuse of our young people, the idea of the Berkeley Police Department leading ceasefire that is to be in place for violence prevention and supporting leadership among our young people is very disturbing. We need to look at who is managing ceasefire, who will be in leadership in it, and removing the presence of the Berkeley Police Department with our young people until this investigation is over and we get a handle on this culture in the Berkeley Police Department. And if there are people that are going to work with ceasefire, Councilman Taplin, their histories need to be investigated, and they need to be represent the communities that they are serving and need to look like the communities that they are serving. I'm complete. And I think that
thank you very much.
The council has to hold the city manager accountable to making sure that we find outside leadership for the Berkeley Police Department.
Glenn Turner, followed by B. Beekman.
I'd like to echo the push, I mean, the imperative, really, that there is an independent investigation. The Police Accountability Board has their job, which is the criminal acts that seem to be revealed. But there's a whole culture of graft and corruption, I have to use those words, in the city management. And I'm thinking about the city manager. I'm thinking about the city police chief. It's beyond believable that they did not know. Okay, the Fifth Amendment is all fine and good, but they're not, you know, nobody's going to believe it that they didn't know. And anybody who lives here knows it's true. Statistics show racial bias. There's all kinds of stuff. So there's a deep-seated investigation that must be looked at. And the city council, you people are on the spot now to actually deal with the fallout that the letting the city manager do it is not the answer, because she didn't do it and the police chief didn't do it. They didn't know beyond belief. Thank you.
B. Beekman followed by T. V.
Hi, Blair Beekman here. This is the first time hearing of this incident. I'm really sorry it's happening to the people in the city of Berkeley at this time. Really a good luck on how to work it out. Good luck in working with the PAB and what they can do for this process. A lot of responsibility on their part. I hope we can learn to really respect what the PAB can do. With that said, I wanted to be able to simply comment that that your work with the AOPR issues and data collection, you've improved upon them. You've added a few additional civil protection ideas to the future of these data collection practices. I share those ideas with other cities, and I think it's an awesome example. I hope you can learn how to make that a more public process in the future. Thank you incredibly. I hope we're all thankful for that. Make it open for all of us in the future. Thanks.
Thank you. TV followed by Abel. The name TV, you should be able to speak. Okay, I'm going to go to Bell, and hopefully we'll hear from the prior speaker. Bell, are you there?
Yeah. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council, and participants and the public. I'm Abel Burrow, student of UC Berkeley, and speaking on behalf of the ACC. Today, I speak in opposition to the appointment of Jennifer Lewis as Chief of Police. I would like to begin by recognizing we reside in Berkeley, California. In a nation otherwise plagued by actions of police brutality and distrust, it is imperative that we act as a progressive leader by monitoring and regulating the actions of our police department. Following the recent events and information that has come to light, we now possess vital evidence of acts that have no place in this community. I'm not going to spend a single second arguing why these actions are derogatory, provide the basis of racial bias in incarceration, and discriminate against those from economically disadvantaged backgrounds. As a youth growing up in this city, to me, I place my complete faith in your voices. Since the silent politics of administrative officials during this time would mean their compliance towards the acts in question. The most ideal way of ensuring the trust of people in the system would be to have a transparent and public investigation led by the Police Accountability Board. And until such an investigation is completed, it is but fair that the appointment of Jennifer Lewis as chief is withheld and the mayor retains a rational neutral stand. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to go back to TV. We could not hear you. Are you there? TV? Uh, It looks like you're unmuted, but we can't hear you. Okay, I'm going to go to Mark Statton. Hopefully, we'll get a better connection. Mark, are you there?
Yeah, hey, thanks. It was stunning to hear the public defender of Alameda County come and excoriate our police department and the chief, acting chief. I don't know about you guys. I was embarrassed. I was galvanized by his words, and I was also incredibly embarrassed. You know, we're so used to a police department that gives us lip service, like, yes, yes, we're doing everything right. We're doing it just the way you want it to be done. You know, they can hardly, Officer Roleri would sit and with vaguely disguised contempt in these meetings. And we're just supposed to take it. We're just supposed to say, okay, I guess they're on the right track. You know, we need outside leadership. We need people that are gonna buy into what we're trying to do here. Nothing, the SCU, the PAB, none of the things that we're trying to do work with a department that has just decided to go with business as usual and to not buy into the values that we have continually expressed that we want them to adhere to. So please take all of everybody's words, including especially Brendan Wood, and really reevaluate where we stand and how we move forward with this, with our police department and our leadership. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to go back to TV. Are you there? I don't believe we can hear you. We're going to go to George Lippman. Mr. Lippman.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I'm speaking for Racism and Criminal Justice Group, RCJR. It was very helpful to hear the framing from Ayanna Davis. It's fundamental to understand the institutionalized white supremacy and racism in policing and in ours, our department as well. The original sin really here in Berkeley is the failure to implement the fair and impartial policing program, in particular, the early intervention system or early warning system. If that had been actually implemented and not just as a review program for individual police officers, but to really understand and address the widespread disparities which have not gone away, which was the point of the whole fair and impartial policing program from the beginning. Of course, this is going to happen. And incidents like this, and the incident last year, a couple of years ago, with what was they were caught on tape by Copwatch, that are undeniable. They're video evidence. Nothing, as far as I know, has been done about those, and nothing really has been done to implement the core aspects of the fair and impartial policing program that you, the council, put into effect in 18 months ago. Finally, yes, an independent consultant. Yes, that has to happen. That's going to happen, but it needs to be overseen by the council, not the city manager. That's another conflict of interest. And it also should be chosen by the city council. And there's precedent for that. You have consultants to oversee other studies in the past. So don't just give this back to the city manager to run. Thank you.
Thank you. Matthew Lewis, followed by Ellie.
Sorry, could you come back to me? I'm having a bit of connectivity trouble.
Okay. We'll go next to Ellie, followed by Mari.
Thank you. I also want to speak against the confirmation of Jen Lewis as police chief. I agree with what previous commenters have said. There needs to be a robust investigation of the racist, classist, and illegal text messages that have recently been uncovered. This should be done by the Police Accountability Board and currently by Berkeley City Council. I also want to add, this is my first Berkeley City Council meeting, but I know my parliamentary procedure pretty well. I hear the annoyance in your voice, Mr. Mayor, when you're giving your own opinion. And I want to point out that you've had ample opportunity earlier in this meeting, both to voice your disapproval and to allow public comment on the issue. Your actions speak louder than your words, and it is crystal clear to me that you are manipulating the rules to the best of your ability to limit public backlash. I urge the council to hold a vote to indefinitely delay the appointment until the investigation by the PAB and City Council is complete. And I come away with very little confidence in the council end of that bargain.
Mari, followed by Amber.
Hi, I just want to ditto all of the wonderful, eloquent statements that have been said by my community members prior. There is an unfortunate culture, and it's not just our city leadership. It is the foundation of this country to be very insular and protect the leadership and the politics protecting itself. There is a culture of not holding each other accountable and having a fear base to protect those who are in this elite group. And you are, you know, sworn at when you are elected, you are sworn, you do an ethics training that you are supposed to uphold justice and equity and listen to the constituents. It should not just be all of what everyone said in terms of the investigation being led by the PAB and an outside investigation, not led by the manager, not handpicked by the institution. I'm sorry, I'd lost my train of thought, but you guys need to do the right thing. This is a very obvious institutionalized thing that needs to be put an end to. You need to definitely do the right thing, hold the police accountable, stop being in fear and working amongst each other and negotiating politically, and listen to the community and support real equity and justice.
We'll go next to Amber, followed by Moni Law.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, I just want to second the comment made by Ellie and many of the others that came before. I also want to emphasize, as others have said, that the mayor just showed us that he is not remaining impartial in advance of the investigation into the interim chief. He stated just earlier that he believes she had no idea about the tax or quotas, that if she did, she would have done something about it, which is very speculative, and that he hopes the investigation will prove those ideas to be true. The interim chief is explicitly implicated in the specific leaks and the general culture of BPD, so it is wildly corrupt that the mayor would use this public forum to try to paint the chief as innocent or even suggest that he hopes she is innocent when an investigation hasn't even begun. As an earlier commenter said, BPD is rotten from top to bottom, and it starts with City Council, as proven by the mayor this evening. And this may come off as harsh to those new to these kind of meetings, but to those who have watched the mayor's and the City Council's handling of police corruption and abuse for many years, his comments come as no surprise. I also want to say it's exceedingly transparent that the Berkeley scanner is nothing more than a mouthpiece for BPD that puts out police propaganda under the guise of quote-unquote journalism. And the Thank City you. Council's relationship with Emily Raguso / the Berkeley scanner is extremely disturbing.
So I was going to wait until after the public comment, but I think a lot of people are ascribing a lot of assumptions to what I said. And I will go to the other speakers after this. I am responding to the written statement that Chief Lewis had provided yesterday, where she had said that she had not been aware of this prior to the emails and the information being publicized and provided to the City Council, that if she was aware, that she would have taken action. Now, if in the course of the investigation, we find out that that was not correct and that she was aware and she should have taken action, then absolutely action needs to be taken to address that. I absolutely do have an open mind about the outcome of an investigation, and I strongly believe that we need to have an investigation. And the first thing I said to the city manager when we received this is we need an independent investigation. So I really just like to ask the public to not make assumptions about my opinions or intent. I take this extremely seriously as the mayor of the city and as a person of color. It's unacceptable. We absolutely need to get the bottom of this, and we need to hold people accountable, whoever is responsible for what happened. And look at the pattern of behavior one thing that's concerning to me is why didn't anyone actually report this behavior to the brass in the police department? What's the issue there? There's a lot that we have to understand. There's a lot we have to uncover. We need a strong early intervention system so that we can address patterns of behavior in the future. And I absolutely take this seriously. I am not trying to condone anyone's actions if they are responsible for engaging in, you know, misconduct or unconstitutional or racist policing. We absolutely want to hold people accountable, but we also live in a system where people are innocent until proven guilty. We don't know what the outcome is going to be. And I also don't want to come to an assumption about whether somebody is innocent or guilty. I want to see what the outcome of that investigation is. And we did a full and thorough investigation. Moni Law. Ms. Law, you should be able to speak.
Unmute myself. There we go. Maya Angelou said that hate has created a number of problems and has not solved any. And this is an appropriate week that we're talking about this issue, as well as the sad passing of our friend and colleague, Barbara Ann White, who was a champion for justice. And truth and justice is what we're seeking here. And as an attorney, I agree that facts must be brought forth, evidence must be proven, an item needs to be given full consideration, and that shall happen here now, fortunately. It also is known in the area of employment law and agency that there's an issue of respondent superior, which is a concept that if pervasive conduct exists, that there are persons who know or should know what is occurring under their watch. And there is the concept of the buck stops here. So the question is, as we review this issue, many of us who have been harmed by racism and have PTSD, which I didn't realize till once when I saw an officer arresting a Black person after I had been bashed in the back by the same police officer a couple of years prior, that I started crying uncontrollably and could not stop. And my good friend Paul Blake said that's PTSD. We need to do everything we can to root out bad officers and certainly support the good ones, but we definitely have a better job to do here. And this must be fully evaluated and investigated. Thank you for pulling the item. The city manager did that apparently a little earlier, but I do want to see outcomes with truth and justice prevailing in the end, and that we need a better police department. We're entitled to that as citizens of Berkeley. Bigotry does not belong in Berkeley, as do not the police who are conducting themselves in such a horrible way, the Proud Boys or any other bigot. They don't belong in a town of values that talk about inclusion, diversity, acceptance, and belonging. Those texts made me sick to my stomach, and I'm happy that we're looking into this for full evaluation and assessment before any decision making is going to take place for a long-term appointment. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go next to Matthew Lewis.
Let's be clear what the mayor and a majority of the city council tried to do tonight. What tried to do tonight was to rush through the appointment of the interim chief. And the reason why is because you require city council approval to appoint a department head. But once they are appointed as a department head, under the city charter, the council cannot remove them. Only the city manager can. And so it is the same thing we always see with the police chief. The city council then gets to wash their hands of having to get rid of problematic police chiefs, as they've all been. This was an attempt to push them through by the mayor and the city council and the city manager before it was realized that they couldn't do it. That would be too politically damaging. So then you would not have to do this. And it's the same thing. The city council keeps the city manager in place so that they can say, "Oh, I'm not in charge of this. The city manager is doing this bad right-wing policy," and then giving the city manager cover. And it's essentially a quid pro quo.
Thank you, Matthew. We'll go next to Emily.
Hi, this is Emily Raguso from the Berkeley Scanner. All I did want to say was that I have written 4 stories about the offensive texts and misconduct claims since yesterday. I have reported on the Police Accountability Board vote and their investigation. I have contacted Brandon Wood's office, and I will continue to seek all records about police misconduct and report on police misconduct. And I think my record speaks for itself, and I will definitely be actively pursuing all information regarding all of the allegations. So thank you and have a good night.
Thank you. Okay, I don't see any other raised hands. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you all for, the meeting is adjourned, but Vice Mayor Harrison.
I think just a few very quick things. One is that this is not all about guilt or innocence of individual people. It's about management systems. And as we pass the early identification system under both the Fair and Impartial Policing program and the reimagining that you held, that you led, Mr. Mayor, and I really appreciated your work there. I think that's what we need to be looking at, is why don't we have a system that identifies these problems as they're coming up? That's, to me, the biggest issue. There are individuals that have blame, of course. One of them just resigned as the head of the union tonight. But there's more to it than that. And I think that's where I'm a little concerned. Secondarily, I want to make sure that the investigation is under the council and not the city manager, if at all possible. And if we do establish some kind of probationary period, which is allowed under the charter, that we have a role in determining whether that period has been successfully concluded. I'm not assuming anything about Acting Chief Lewis at all, but I am assuming something about our lack of systems and our ability to manage these issues as they come up and to identify them early. And that's what I want to see as the outcome for all this. The other outcome I want is the strength of the PAB. They have in the charter the authority to conduct policy reviews. And that's what this would be. It is a policy complaint, and they are allowed to do that. So I appreciate there'll be two investigations. I'm not sure who we're thinking is going to do the external one. Is we're looking at the DOJ. I think that's something that needs a little bit more discussion, you know, how that's going to happen. And I hope we will talk about that as a group and not just leave that to the city manager. And I think the only other thing I want to say is that I was very disturbed by Mr. Wood's comments, mainly because I feel that there was a kind of lack of communication with his office when he raised these issues many, many months ago. And there's not a right or wrong answer. He's going to think one thing. The DA is going to think another standard. I don't think it's necessarily true. The department did something wrong, but I think it's incumbent on all of us to talk to our fellow officials in government. So I'm hoping that'll be a standard that when someone of that stature reaches out to our department, they will reach back to him in a more significant way. And again, not assuming anything about what the right answer is in that situation. I just also want to say that I really support the bike patrol because I think of it as community policing. And I think it's really well suited to the congested and busy streets of the downtown and Telegraph, but has to be suited to dealing with compassion with those that are living on those very crowded streets. And that, I think, needs to be ensured that we're going to move forward in that fashion. So thank you for letting me make these comments. I'll be saying more in my newsletter.
We are technically adjourned. We did extend, well, those of us that are present, we still have a majority present, to hear the public comments. And so given that, Ms. Davis, you already spoke. Thank you for your comments. Unless any other council members have any comments they'd like to make before we adjourn, we can adjourn the meeting. Okay, it's 2 a.m. over here. Hope everyone has a good evening, and thank you all very much.